Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian, regardless of which language you speak or don't speak. We are thrilled that you're joining us for another episode of the Calcioland podcast. I want to begin by thanking all the people that left reviews for the podcast. I'm always asking you guys to do that. You delivered. We've gotten an amazing feedback from so many listeners. I love seeing Premier League fans that are getting into Serie A. Thanks to our podcast, that really warms my heart. So we have a great episode today. We have a game picks with our friend Thousand Names to preview Serie A weekend. We have some fantastic Twitter questions, some on transfers, some on what's going on the pitch, and then a fantastic interview with our friend John Solano from IS Roma Press, which you'll see it couldn't have been more timely. But before we get to all that stuff, I am joined by our great friend, co-host, excellent producer Alex Goldberg. And people really like when we do comparisons on players. We've done Pjanic and Verratti, Milinkovic, Savic, and Pogba. But today I'm going to do something a little bit different, Alex. Both you and I are big NBA fans as well as football fans as well. So I want to ask you this. Which player dominates their sport at a higher level between Messi and LeBron James, in your opinion, Alex?
Oh, you know, David, all of these polls we've talked about on the podcast have been very tough for me to decide on, but this definitely takes the cake. I'll put aside my bias against LeBron James, and I'll truly be objective on this. When I think of the word dominate, I always think of a bigger person, a bigger player in stature. Like Shaquille O'Neal was the most dominating player of the 90s. He wasn't the greatest. That was Jordan. Jordan's the greatest NBA player of all time. Jordan's the greatest sports player of all time. Let's be real. But when I think of domination, I do think of someone who is built like LeBron James. But then obviously if we're talking about Messi, who's very small, I'm not going to take the word dominate so literally. So let's really compare them. But we got to grade this on a curve first, of course, because basketball is 5v5, football is 11v11. If we look at their trophy cabinets, it's a headache. They both have so much individual silverware and team silverware that we could be here all day debating, well, how about Messi's four Champions Leagues versus LeBron James's NBA titles? LeBron James has been to the NBA Finals six times, but only won twice. But should we applaud him for being there every year? Messi went to the World Cup, but he lost in the World Cup. It's very hard to compare these things. So I would love to just throw in a tiebreaker like durability and pick my answer that way. But LeBron and Messi are two of the most durable athletes I could ever think of. Maybe LeBron gets the slight edge, but Messi has players clipping at his heels all day long. So to me, it's pretty much a wash. So I'm going to decide this on who's a better teammate. Back in the 90s, Michael Jordan was asked by the coach of the Bulls, Phil Jackson. Every time the Bulls went out for a little nightlife, he was asked by Phil Jackson to babysit Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman, as you know, a little bit of a loose cannon. And Jordan wanted to win so badly, he would do that. He'd keep his eyes on Rodman. He would do whatever it takes to keep the chemistry within the clubhouse good and peaceful. I don't think LeBron would do that, David. LeBron has continuously whined about not getting the teammates he wants, and then he gets the teammates he wants. Obviously, he formed the super team down in South Beach. Messi's a better teammate to me. LeBron quit on his team in the 2010 Eastern Conference Finals against your Boston Celtics. I have not seen Messi quit. So there's my answer. I'm taking Messi. What about you?
Wow, you're passionate. I like it. And yeah, it's a great poll. And, you know, it's not that I'm dodging the question. I think either one's a great pick. I can make a great case for either. I think what's really remarkable to me about LeBron James is he's 33, never really had an injury in his career. Just in the playoffs alone, it's like he's played an extra season. This year, he's as good as he's ever been. His longevity, his dedication to his body is absolutely amazing. Messi, of course, amazing player as well. Definitely in the conversation as the greatest that I've ever seen in football. So I think you can make a great case. But the reason I wanted to ask you this and the reason I put the poll, it's also like I go back to the fact that we should really just appreciate greatness. I think sometimes fandom makes us, maybe not appreciate this thing. Because I knew, most of my followers, obviously, football fans much more than the NBA. But I thought maybe the Ronaldo fanboys might sway the poll. Messi won by a lot. And look, there's no wrong answer there. But I'm just saying it's also important to really appreciate greatness. And I think the consistency of these two players is really, really incredible. The last thing that I want to say about this is, like, I'm old. I've been around. When I was young, I thought there'd be nobody as good as Maradona. Then the Brazilian Ronaldo came along, and in that very short stretch of time, he may have been the best player that I saw for like 2 or 3 years. And I was like, okay, nobody's ever going to be in that conversation with him. Then, of course, Messi comes along. So what I'm going to say to a lot of our younger listeners is, don't be surprised if in 20 years, the flavor, whichever is the best player then, you're going to hear a lot of younger people say, hey, that's the best ever, and that's it. So, this is why you always hear me talk just about players that I've seen. I try not to compare too many of the other eras. And another thing that I want to say is, I remember when we had Rory Smith on our podcast, and what I found fascinating is he's been around the block. He's not someone that overreacts. And he said there may never be someone as good as what we've seen with Messi and Ronaldo. So my caution to people is, just try to appreciate them. And then maybe in 20 years, you'll be like me telling the younger guys, hey, there were some great players too. Beyond Messi and LeBron James, the only athletes that I've seen like really dominate as a higher level, you mentioned Jordan, best NBA player that I ever saw, killer instinct for sure. And the other was Mike Tyson in his prime. Never seen someone dominate a sport like he did. I'll never forget where I was when he lost against Buster Douglas. Nothing has shocked me in my life the way that did. Even Trump winning the election didn't surpass that. Those were the two most dominating that I've ever saw in all sports. So just appreciate greatness, because they're like bookmarks in your life, these great athletes. They are people that you'll always go back to time and time again. So very interesting discussion. I always appreciate your input with these, Alex. And another person whose input I really appreciate is our friend Thousand Names in Italy, with his game picks. This is what he sent me this week. As usual, we're going to pick three games, him and I. The first one he has is Napoli facing Bologna at home. He has it 3-0 for Sarri squad, goals by Hamsik, Callejon, and Mertens. His comment is, fans are going to be throwing trash bags at Verdi, who turned down Napoli. Again, I'm going to go back to Rory Smith, who said, in Naples, nobody sits in the first ring of the stadium because Lord knows what is going to be thrown at you. So Verdi might get some repercussions for turning down Napoli. Sarri is going to be in ecstasy on this win, and Napoli is going to celebrate another key win on their march to the Scudetto. Next, man, I'm going to agree with Thousand. I think Napoli is going to win big this one as well. Next match is, we have Milan-Lazio, very intriguing match. Lazio's really on an amazing roll. Thousand has it as 1-1, goals by Bonucci and Nani. His comment is, Gattuso is going to start getting lucky, while Simone Inzaghi, luck is going to start running out. Here I'm going to disagree with Thousand. I think Lazio is going to win. They're really on a huge roll. I know there's been some encouraging signs from Milan. I think the best sign is now when they fall behind in a game, it's not an automatic loss. But I really haven't been that impressed quite yet. And I think Lazio is just such on a roll that they're going to win this one. And then the final match that he picked is Roma-Sampdoria. They just faced each other as a remake for a match from earlier in the season that was rained out. He has Roma winning 2-0, two goals by Schick. He says that the former Sampdoria striker is going to show that he's ready to make people forget about Zecco, assuming he leaves. He says that Di Francesco is going to save his job. And on the flip side, Sampdoria manager Giampaolo is going to continue to struggle. I'm actually going to say that Roma's crisis is going to continue. It wouldn't surprise me if this is a draw. And I think Quagliarella is going to continue his amazing form. It wouldn't surprise me if he scores in this match. A couple of other matches I want to bring to your attention are Juve traveling to Verona to face Chievo, and Inter's traveling to Ferrara to play against Spal. Last shout out I'm going to give to Thousand. People in Italy tune in to hear his picks. So I'll read them in Italian real fast. Napoli-Bologna 3-0. Sacchetti della spazzatura contro Verdi. Sarri in fuffa, canta Napoli. Then Milan-Lazio 1-1. Gattuso-Fortunato, finirà il culo di Inzaghi. And the last one, Roma-Samp. Chic, il cieco prova a far dimenticare Zecco, Di Francesco salva la panchina, Giampaolo dopo aver umiliato la Juve non ne imbrocca una. So big thank you to our friend Thousand, keep picking games along with us, we love getting feedback from people on the picks. And speaking of picks, one thing that's very difficult to do is to pick through all the great questions that you guys send us into the podcast using the CalcioLand hashtag. We got so many good ones this week that I already saved a few for Monday. But before we get to those next week, Alex, which ones are we going to go over tonight?
All right, David, let's go back to your old friend Kita Balde. What do you make of the Kita Balde to Napoli rumors?
So these generated in France. There's actually RMC Sports. They are actually very reliable. I try really not to pass judgment on others, but I'm not afraid to give shout-outs. We've had Ed Ahrens on our podcast because she's great, and they're really good in France. So they reported that Napoli made this big offer, over $40 million, to get Kita Balde from Monaco. From what I understand, he hasn't become a full-time starter there. It doesn't surprise me that Napoli's after him because they've been interested in him before. They had made a big offer to Lazio, and, you know, now they're in this title race for Serie A. So the figure, the reported over $40 million, maybe surprises me a little bit, but not so much that they would be interested. However, Napoli are going to go with a little bit, a slightly cheaper options in the short term. They're going to bring in Ajax winger Younes, who his contract is set to expire. They were going to wait to get him in the summer. Then Swansea jumped into the race. So I think he's going to take the medical tomorrow. And another player that they're looking at is Sassuolo Politano, winger there. They might offer Unas, the talented player from Bordeaux, in loan to bring him there. So a lot to look at Napoli. That Kita Balde rumor, again, didn't shock me. Maybe the transfer fee might have been a little bit overblown, but I would love to see Kita Balde in Serie A, and I would love to see him play for Sarri, that's for sure.
That would be super entertaining. I feel like also Lucas Moura, who's been rumored. Either way, Sarri's clearly going after some very exciting wingers, if it's true. Yeah. And let's move on to, what are your thoughts on Sarri complaining about the schedule?
So, you know, actually, I have to say, I love Sarri, but recently I've been fairly critical of him. This week I had a column. I analyzed Napoli's depth. I think he's getting a pass when people say that the bench players aren't good enough. I think it's more a matter that he's not getting the most out of them. And I think his constant complaining is not good. And I used to say that about Conte at Juve, his constant complaining about the Champions League and revenues. I think he was setting up his players to fail. And I think all this complaining on the schedule, really a little bit overblown. Now, Sarri would tell you he only complains after a win. He never complains after a loss. Granted, it's been a while since Napoli lost, but I don't think it's that good. And quite frankly, the fact that Juve, the schedule is set up the way that it is, it's really driven by the fact that Juve is still in the CL. They play on Wednesday. In the Europa League, they play on Thursday. And Juve is still in the Coppa Italia. So I actually think specifically this complaining doesn't make him look good. And I think the next step for Sarri, because boy, is he great, is to start rotating more and complaining less.
Oh, I didn't hear that Conte complains, did I? I'll move on for my own health reasons. All right, David, what are the odds Super Mario joins Juve on a free transfer this summer? And if Italy was in the World Cup, would Balotelli deserve a call-up to the squad?
This is a good question to put together. So let's answer the first part. We know Juve is great at signing players on free transfers. Most of our listeners may not be familiar with the fact that Juve has a great relationship with with Super Mario's agent Mino Raiola, the Pogba deal. They also have Keane, that talented striker from Raiola. Raiola's been an intermediary for Juve in deals abroad. So there's a great relationship with Juve, but I just don't see Balotelli at Juve. Although he's matured, we've talked about it on the podcast, Juve likes soldatini, the good soldiers. And the other problem is Balotelli doesn't have a great relationship with the senators on Juve on the Italian national team. So the Buffon, the Chiellini, the Barzagli, the Marchisios. of the world. So I just don't see that happening. And for that same reason, as well as Balotelli has played, say Italy had gone to the World Cup, I'm not sure he would have been part of the squad, also because there are some good other Italian strikers. But I'm still a big Mario fan. I'd love to see him back in Serie A. I just don't think it'll be at Juve.
Okay. All right, David. Is Perisic's lack of form due to no competition for his spot? And what was my boy Lorenzo Insigne doing in Milano on Sunday night?
So let's start with Insigne. So a lot was made. Insigne was actually at the Inter-Roma match. He was in the stands. I think some people are trying to make some transfer conspiracy theories on that. None of that. The reason he was there is Napoli had played earlier in the day in Bergamo against Atalanta. Bergamo's like a half hour away from Milan. I think he was, you know, Monday's always a day off for players. I think he was just enjoying some shopping in Milano. So let's not make some transfer conspiracy theories. As far as Perisic, look, it's not surprising that Inter's crisis has started since his lack of form. I'm not a huge believer that these guys aren't motivated, and if there was someone competing, maybe they'd play better. I think maybe for some players, but not as someone at his level. I just think he's in poor form right now. Inter, though, does need a little bit more depth up front. They're certainly making some moves in that regard. I think it's maybe more of a factor that Perisic might be a little tired as opposed to him needing competition to be more motivated.
Okay, let's move to Inter. Are they strong enough financially to refuse a big offer for Icardi in the summer? And would he want to leave?
So it's an interesting question. So Inter, you know, is owned by Suning, very rich owners from China. You know, they have these financial fair play restrictions. A lot of Inter fans, you know, think that they use that as a cop up for not spending. But I buy it that they have these parameters. So in and of itself, they do have the money to keep Icardi. They've given him a lot of raises. We also saw Inter really good job getting creative. Last summer, there was a lot of momentum on Perisic potentially going to Man United to kind of pay off the financial fair play, balance their books. And then they just sold three minor players and raised the funds that way. I think they can do the same with Icardi. But the issue is, you know, Icardi has been very loyal to Inter, has stayed. I have a feeling, you know, if they don't make the Champions League this year and a club like Real Madrid comes along or a huge club like that, I think he'd be tempted a little bit. So I think they can afford to keep him. They can afford to give him another big raise. But it's going to come down to, you know, is Inter going to be in the Champions League? Is he going to want to stay?
All right, staying on Inter, David, what are your thoughts on Davide Santone shutting down his Instagram account after receiving so much abuse from Inter fans over his blunder in the match against Roma?
So I want to give a shout out to our friend Nima and his great site, Sempre Inter. They've had some really nice posts defending Santone, saying, look, everyone makes mistakes. He even owned up to his mistakes. Look, we all know he's a limited player. It's not great. It's not his fault that, you know, he's playing so much for Inter. So, you know, I'll tell you, you know, social media can be fantastic. Honestly, you and I, Alex, wouldn't know each other without social media. Our podcast wouldn't be growing so much. Without social media, I'm able to reach out to amazing guests because of social media. And, you know, I haven't achieved much in this game, but what I have achieved is in large part thanks to social media. So there's some great aspects to it. Unfortunately, this is what happened to Santone is the dark side of social media. I think a lot of people, you know, they follow people that have the same interests. It becomes an echo chamber. Unfortunately, for some people, social media can also be a race to the bottom to see who can come up with the most creative insult. And people are like competing to do this. I'm not here to tell you, you can do whatever you want. But I think that's really unfortunate. You know, I think social media can be a double-edged sword for players as well. I think this is kind of sad, though, that it happened.
Well, look what Sebastian Giovinco did. He went over to the MLS and became the Messi of the MLS. David, who would you rather have between a healthy Marchisio or a Bonaventura? Is Bonaventura the most underrated player in Serie A?
I'm going to get in trouble for this answer because I still get a lot of crap from Milan fans for a tweet on Bonaventura. So I'm going to try to be a little bit diplomatic. So I think a healthy Marchisio, unfortunately, I'm not even sure if we're going to see that. He's 32. He's had a lot of injuries. I think a purely healthy Marchisio, I would say, is a slightly better player than Bonaventura. Maybe I'm trying to be a little bit diplomatic. And the reason I say that is Marchisio has been linked to big clubs, earns a really big salary at Juve, played a lot for the Italian national team. I think Bonaventura is a good player. I'm not saying he's not a good player. I think, you know, what happens sometimes when you have a team with a big following that's been really bad for a while, I think good players get elevated maybe to a higher status than they are. Realistically, I think Bonaventura is a good player. Never really been linked to a top club, never really been a big part of the Azzurri. His agent is Mino Raiola. He recently signed an extension last year for a mid salary, $2 million net. To give you a comparison, Donnarumma makes three times as much. They have the same agent. Bonaventura is in his prime, 27. This would be the contract where he really cashes in. So, you know, I think opinions on players are subjective, but I try to look at it in that way. So I think Bonaventura is a good player. I think he might be a little bit overrated by some Milan fans, but I also think it's fair to say with non-Milan fans, he might be underrated as well, though.
Okay.
Was that diplomatic enough, Alex?
I think so. I think you told that line pretty well. All right, Dave, let's move away from football. What concerts are you hitting up this summer, and what tours are you mostly looking forward to?
Yeah, so we took a little break from the pop culture because we had that great interview with Brian Hyatt with Rolling Stone, which was pure pop culture. I want to thank everyone. That episode actually did a lot better than I thought. So thank you, everyone, for checking out, and thank you for indulging me in the pop culture. I always like to say I'm a failed music critic and movie critic pretending to be a football analyst. So I'm big into concerts. People that follow me on Twitter and on Instagram, you know, I post, I go to a lot of shows. So before the summer, there's a couple of shows that I'm looking forward to. I'm going to see Noel Gallagher in a couple of weeks here in Boston. Great show. I went a few years ago to see him where he played. Really puts on an outstanding show. It's not Oasis, of course, but you're still going to get a quality show. I'm also going to go see Marilyn Manson at the House of Blues. Later on, a great live act. If you're into just great guitar players, I'm going to go see Buckethead, who used to play in Guns N' Roses for a little while. I really like going to see just great guitar players. I saw Alex Skolnick last year. It was a lot of fun. So that's before the summer. In the summer, there are some great tours that I'm hitting up. I'm going to see U2 at the TD Garden. I haven't seen U2 in quite some time. I'm not a huge fan, I'd say, of their music, but they put on amazing live shows. Always groundbreaking. I'm really curious to see what they have planned for this year. And then I have two big shows at Fenway that I'm looking forward to. The Foo Fighters are coming. If our friend Brian Monzo, producer for Mike Francesa's show, is listening, you still have an open invitation to come with me to that show. And then this week I found out that Pearl Jam are coming back at Fenway. And that I really can't wait. That's the one I'm looking forward to the most. Kind of like you two, I'm not the biggest Pearl Jam fan. I hate to say it, I think their last really great album was Yield, and that was a really long time ago. But when it comes to live shows, I think there's nobody better right now. They put on a three-hour show, different every night, play with a lot of passion. Eddie Vedder is terrific, so I'm looking forward to that. And the last tour that I have planned, I'm sure there will be more. Slayer, a band that I really like, doing their farewell tour, and it's not announced yet, but I really hope to see Nine Inch Nails. So I'm really into music. There's some really good ones this year.
Very rare I chime in, but I was just watching the David Letterman Mark Twain Prize ceremony, and Eddie Vedder did an amazing cover in that. So check that out if you haven't seen it. All right, David,
awesome.
I'm sure you were salivating when you read this question. If you had to choose one owner in Serie A to play a mob boss in a film, who would it be?
So I got to be honest, this question really stopped me. Of the current ones, it's really pretty different. You know, I'm going to go to my safe answer. In the past, he wasn't really a president, but he was basically running not just Juve, but even the Italian Federation. Definitely Maggi. Like, I spent an afternoon with him in Milan. I mean, that was really like being in an episode of Sopranos. If you watch that Sopranos, he really reminds me of a character that they had for a while, Fitch LaManna, really hilarious character. Maggi looks a little bit like him. Of the current ones, it's really hard to say. So I even asked our friend Thousand Names, who's from Naples, lives in Turin. I think he knows a little bit about this culture quite a bit. He said maybe Bologna's president, Joey Saputo. He's Italo-American, but he seems like really a nice guy. So great question. Shout out to the person that sent this one to us, Justin Sherman, really good writer. So I'm going to think about this more. Of the current ones, maybe the most that I could say is maybe Lazio president Lotito, but more in like the style of like a don from the city of Rome than southern Italy.
All right. Last question of episode 80 of the Calcioland podcast. David, what was your reaction to the Oscar nominations?
So I'm very excited to say that I was talking to our great friend, Andrew Barker. We've had on many times. I wasn't sure if he would lower himself to talk about movies and the Oscars with a peon like me, but he's the senior writer for Variety, the magazine, the web publications that covers the Oscars as well as anyone. He said he will come on as we get closer to it. So we'll have a special episode on the Oscars, maybe similar to what we did with Brian Hyatt. So I'll tell you my reaction. My gut reaction is that I was very happy to see Phantom Thread, that's the movie with Daniel Day-Lewis, get a lot of nominations. There had seemed to have been a lot of momentum for it being shut out for Best Picture, Best Director, P.T. Anderson, who's my favorite right now with Tarantino, and Daniel Day-Lewis. They all got nominations. Of course, Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead did the soundtrack. I think he really needs to win. He got robbed for There Will Be Blood 10 years ago, so I was glad they made the cut. Shape of Water, who I think is going to win the Oscar, as it stands now, got the most nominations, usually a good sign for that, did well. And then Lady Bird, probably my favorite movie of the year, also did well. So before we have Andrew on for the Oscar special, there's a few more movies I need to see. I've seen most of the contenders. So I'm looking forward to it. I will say the nominations played out really well for us to have in a great Oscar special. So speaking of working out really well, we couldn't have had a better guest for this week than our dear friend John Solano for IS Roma Press. With all the news on Dzeko and Palmieri potentially going to your team, Alex, Chelsea, and Roma struggle on the pitch. Now, I will tell you, right as we were recording the interview, Di Marzio posted an update on Dzeko. We're recording this on Thursday night. Tomorrow should be the decisive day for both Dzeko and Palmieri. Chelsea's already looking at other options. They were trying to see if they could get Giroud on loan. He's not interested in that option. They're looking at Kurzawa from PSG as an alternative to Emerson Palmieri. So in a way, I was a little bit disappointed because I mean, ideally this deal would have been done. We would have had John on. So we got it, and we did, and we went into a lot on what Dzeko and Emerson Palmieri will bring to Chelsea. As it stands now, I still think it's more likely than not that they will both join Chelsea. But just be aware of the news as you listen to the podcast. I wanted to point that out. But without further ado, we are thrilled to have our dear friend John coming on. Definitely check out his sites and podcasts. A lot of great stuff there. And for the interview segment of the podcast, with everything going on at Roma, not just on the transfer market, even on the pitch, we really couldn't have had a better guest tonight than our dear friend John Solano. He's been on a bunch of times. We always get great feedback. Having come on, you know him as the editor of the great website, IS Roma Press. They have a great podcast as well that I listen to religiously. A lot of great stuff there. So welcome back to Calcioland, John. It's a real pleasure to have you on.
Absolutely. Very happy to be back.
Awesome. So great stuff. So, John, as we're recording this, and right now it's Thursday around 5 p.m. here on the East Coast, there's no indication that the Dzeko deal is collapsing. It sounds like tomorrow might be a pretty decisive day. Obviously, with the window closing so soon, you would imagine that it would be anyway, but it does seem that we're getting close to getting a resolution one way or the other. So let's talk about it as if it's going to go through. We want to fill in our listeners, big Chelsea fans, Premier League fans, and even fans of Roma. So I wanted to ask you this. Last summer, Roma broke their transfer record for an incoming move to get Patrick Schick. He's shown some flashes for sure at Roma. We all know how talented he is, but him and Dzeko don't seem to be a great fit together. So based on what you've seen from Schick at Sampdoria and in his brief time at Roma, going on the assumption that Dzeko leaves, do you think Schick is ready to lead Roma's front line?
I do. He's been almost criminally wasted this season. Now, granted, he's had the injuries. We all saw in the preseason the condition that he had going on with his heart. So it took him a while, obviously, to get back into form. He really didn't make it back into the team until right around November. So he missed a huge chunk of the season. And when he has been playing this season, he's been wasted on the right wing, which, you know, anyone who saw him at Sampdoria, that's just not his role. That's not his strengths. Granted, I've been surprisingly shocked by his pace. He actually has these bursts of just incredible quickness. But he's not a right winger. He's not going to fly past you. He's tall, decent in the air, not great. But his role is obviously centrally. So assuming Dzeko does leave Roma, I do think he is ready, just because I think the football that DiFrancesco plays actually fits him really, really well. He can offer something a little bit different than Dzeko can't. You know, Dzeko likes to stay in that penalty area. He doesn't really offer you much in the buildup. Now, granted, his hold-up play generally is very, very good. The last couple of months, it hasn't been nearly what we've seen. I mean, we all saw the funny clip against Chelsea where he drew out three defenders. We haven't seen anything to that degree lately. He hasn't been that great. But what Schick would be able to offer in the buildup with his dribbling, his ability to draw defenders out, his ability to score from a little further out than Dzeko can, I think it would actually play really well into what Roma do, particularly given that a player like Mohamed Salah is no longer there. So they need more of a dynamic. They need more of a dynamic striker, in my opinion. So I think Schick would fit, you know, Schick fits that mold to a T, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So before we move on to the other player, that Roma player that Chelsea's linked to, give me your two cents on Dzeko. Obviously, this season he hasn't scored at the rate of last season when he led all of Serie A in scoring. I still think he's one of those typical strikers whose value can be measured on goals alone. He opens up a ton of spaces, is really good with his teammates and setting them up for goals. So do you think if the deal goes through, do you think Chelsea fans should be concerned when they see his goal tally going down so much? Do you think he would still bring a lot to the table if he goes there?
No, I think he would bring a ton to the table, particularly if you have, you know, Hazard on the same side. I think Dzeko does incredibly well when he has a winger next to him who has an eye for goal. We saw how well he did with Salah. Dzeko, you know, if he's in the area, he's a danger. You know, he's not so good in the air anymore. He did have a headed goal the other day against Sampdoria, but he is actually quite good at, now I said a little bit ago, he's not as great as Schick can from scoring from distance, but he's actually pretty decent at being able to score from outside the area. So if you can have him in the same side as Hazard, who is obviously going to draw defenders out as well on his own, you know, just in his own regard, I think Dzeko can do great. We see the way Conte likes to play. I think Dzeko honestly fits really, really, really well. Frankly, I'm shocked that Morata hasn't done better.
Yeah, I think we all are.
I mean, I will admit, for what he did at Juve, I thought he would fit perfectly. It's been a little bit of a rough patch, but just the way Dzeko likes to play his game, I think he fits perfectly into Conte's side.
I couldn't agree more. So let's move on to the other Roma player linked to Chelsea, someone who doesn't have, obviously, nearly as big a profile as Dzeko. And this is left-back Emerson Palmieri. He really had a, before he tore his ACL, and I think that was in the last match of the season, really had, was really superb, made it all the way to the Italian national team. He was linked to Juve. He was linked to Liverpool. Ironically, had Chelsea been able to get Alexandro, I think Juve was going to go straight up on Emerson Palmieri. So regardless of my opinion on him, I think that says a lot. And we had you on the podcast last summer when Rudiger went to Roma. Both you and I spoke highly of him. I think Alex is pretty happy with him. I think most Chelsea fans are with him. So based on your track record with this, what would you tell Chelsea fans about Emerson Palmieri?
Frankly, should both of them be sold, I would be more upset about Roma losing Palmieri than I would Dzeko. I think he is a fantastic, fantastic left back. He can play in a defense of 4 or 3. He's just as comfortable in either or. He's got an incredible motor. He just flies up and down the pitch. In my opinion, obviously a little biased, but for me last season, he was really only behind Alexandro in terms of left back in Serie A. I mean, Goulam, for me, I mean, he's praised universally. Emerson was better than him last season, in my opinion. He really, really, really offers a lot in attack. His crossing could certainly improve. One of his strengths, though, is his defensive positioning. He can be caught out, but just by his pace, he's able to make up for some of those mistakes. I think he would fit perfectly in Conte's side, especially if they're going to stick with this three in the back. I think he would be a great fit. And frankly, for the rumored fee that we're seeing, I'm just astounded that Roma would be willing to let him go for so little. I mean, Zappa Costa, who's older, would be going for more. So it puzzles me that Roma would do this. I mean, obviously, you know, their track record of selling this, you know, frankly, shouldn't surprise anybody. But should Chelsea be able to get him for right around the 25 million euros that we're seeing? I just think that's an incredible deal, particularly some of the other fees we've seen in the Premier League. I mean, you want to talk about value for what you've paid. I mean, if you get 90% of the player, 80% of the player that was there last season, he walks into their starting 11, and it's just an incredible deal. So I'm sure a lot of fans are not very familiar with him, but he is such a dynamic left back. I think he would be a fantastic buy. Just fantastic.
Wow. I think Alex is very excited to hear that. Now, let me ask you about another player that's been really impressive this season. This is goalkeeper Alisson. Those who watched the match against Inter saw that's not just the saves that he makes. It's his ball distribution. It's something that in the Premier League they seem to be obsessed with goalkeepers. But boy, does he have that. So Roma, we had a guest, Richard Hall, last week, I think, who pointed out that, you know, Roma has great track record with goalkeepers. Szczesny last season, I think you can make a great case. He was the best goalkeeper in Serie A. He's been fantastic for Juve, subbing in for Buffon in recent weeks. But I think Alisson hasn't, I don't think you really miss Szczesny as great as he's been. So tell me how you rate Alisson and how do you rate his season compared to Szczesny last year?
He's been incredible. I don't know what the actual numbers would be in terms of points that he has salvaged for Roma or, frankly, won outright for Roma. I would guess it's got to be up there with amongst the top in Europe. He has been absolutely incredible. I mean, he's had so many performances where Roma have either drawn or won by a single goal where if it hadn't been for him, they'd drop points. And given where they are right now on the table, I just frankly tremor at the thought of where that could potentially be. He's been fantastic. It's ironic that Roma have him and Szczesny last year. I mean, before Szczesny, their track record, frankly, with goalkeepers. I mean, before, you know, Palota and the Americans came, was horrendous. I mean, absolutely horrendous. Through the 90s, early 2000s, it was terrible. They couldn't find anybody. Really, the first big name that they bought was Stekelenburg. He was a disaster. Couldn't speak a word of Italian. He was gone after two seasons, I think, or maybe it was one. Regardless, their track record is not good. And to see where they are now is just an indictment to, I'll give them all the credit. Walter Sabatini did fantastic bringing both these guys in. Alisson, in my opinion, I think he's right up there with among the top 5 to 10 goalkeepers right now in Europe. The form he is in is just frankly sensational. The thing, I mean, you mentioned his ball distribution, which I didn't have any idea was part of his repertoire, so to speak. His reaction saves are just unbelievable. Caprari for Sampdoria should have had two goals. Should have had two goals yesterday. And Alisson on a free kick and then another shot was just right there to grab them both. He's been sensational for Roma. And in my opinion, probably their most important player this season.
So I'm going to caution everyone because I've been accused of being like a promoter of Serie A fans, and you're hearing these glowing things from John on Palmieri and Alisson. He is not a cheerleader for players. You can just read his Twitter TL for yourself, and you'll see what I mean. So very interesting takes. I definitely agree with everything you're saying on Alisson. So I'm just cautioning people. Don't come at me and tell me, oh, you guys are glorifying these guys. I know John very well, and you can just read his Twitter timeline for yourself and see where he's coming from. So let me ask you about... Go ahead.
Don't ask me about that Aussie.
Yeah, I know you had to, I won't. So let me ask you, though, about another midfielder, much younger one on Roma, and this is Pellegrini, and I think he's been really, really good this season. I think he's been better than Strootman. I think he's definitely been better than De Rossi. He might have even been better than Nainggolan, who's not having a particularly great season. Now, you know, there are these reports that Pellegrini has this exit clause around $25 million. Roma's obviously trying to fix that and keep him. So what do you think is going to happen with him in the future? I'm going to ask you a question in a little bit on Roma's future, but to me, he's really so key for them. So tell our listeners a little bit about him and the plans that Roma has to keep him.
Yeah, so he came back this summer after Roma sold him to Sassuolo. They had an option to rebuy him after a couple seasons. They activated it. He signed, I believe, a four-year contract, and it has a release clause of 25 million euros. So Pellegrini, in my opinion, has been arguably the best midfielder with Roma, probably right next to Nainggolan, who's really, really struggled this season. Strootman has been terrible. De Rossi has been a disaster. Gonalons has been beyond a disaster, just horrible. So it's really been Nainggolan and Pellegrini who have been carrying this midfield. Pellegrini really is a modern, like the embodiment of a modern midfielder. He can go forward. He's really, really sound in defense, which he doesn't often give the appearance of that, but his positioning is really quite good. He offers Roma so much dynamicism, just all over the pitch. You know, with De Rossi, with Strootman, neither of them are quick. They don't really offer you much in the final third. With Pellegrini, you just get so much more with him. So I think it's absolutely pivotal for Roma to hold on to him. Now, in my opinion, I think they're going to find a way to give him a bigger contract, higher wages, and somehow get rid of that release clause because it is absurdly low. Yeah. Frankly, I don't think Roma really envisioned him having this big of a role in his first season back at the club. But given how poor Nainggolan has been, given how poor Strootman has been, given how poor De Rossi has been, he's found himself at the forefront of the starting 11. He has to start every match for them now. Just because the disconnect they've had in the midfield has just been terrible. It's affected them tremendously. So he's right there. He's very important to Di Francesco. So in my opinion, should Di Francesco make it, especially if Di Francesco makes it through the season and remains, he's absolutely unequivocally going to be a key figure in his plans. Now, if they don't make the Champions League, all bets are off, in my opinion. I think every big name within the squad has a potential of being sold, should that happen. But in my opinion, I think Roma understand that the clause is absurdly low. His wages are very, very small. I think it's 1.2 million euros.
Yeah. Net.
So, I mean, given what they pay other guys like Dzeko and Nainggolan, you would almost have to, double or triple that, to hold off Juve. So I do think Roma get it done. Listen, the guy's Roman. He's a Roma fan. He's made that very abundantly clear. But in an interview, I think a year or two ago, he made it clear, you know, he would like the opportunity even abroad. So, you know, if a club like Manchester United comes in or Manchester City, I don't know how he would feel to that. Sure. Maybe he's open to that possibility. But in terms of in Italy, kind of like what we've seen with Nainggolan, I mean, a lot of people, they question, you know, well, why has he stayed at the Roma if he's so good? Why doesn't he go anywhere else, like City, United, Juve, wherever? I just think he's the kind of guy who would remain at Roma and then move abroad. That's just the sense I get. I could absolutely unequivocally be made wrong and have the pie on my face, but that's just the sense I get. But we'll see. I think it would be absolutely foolish for Roma not to do everything in their power to have him remain.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I spent four nights in Rome not that long ago, and it was incredibly obvious to me why Nainggolan and other players would want to stay there. Really a very unique and incredible city. I could totally see how it's a great place to play. So one player, the last player, specific player I want to ask you about is one that both you and I were pretty high on this summer when Roma acquired him. So striker De Frel came, he knew Di Francesco arrived at Roma. I thought he was one of the most underrated players in Serie A, and suffice to say, he's been a pretty big disappointment. I know on your site you talked about Watford's interest, I believe, in him. So what are the odds of him staying or going? What's your assessment of his situation?
You know, I think I've been a big proponent of him. I've been having to stay out for him quite a bit. He's been injured. He's been very unlucky. And he's been played out of position. He's not a right winger, but the Roma have nobody in the right wing position. They've tried five or six different names, all of whom have not really yielded many results. So in fairness to him, he's been deployed in a position that is not suited for him. He's not very quick. He's not that technical. So sticking him out wide, in my opinion, has just been a huge mistake. But it's not his fault. Roma have had injuries. They don't really have a natural right winger. So that's where he finds himself. I was very, very pleased when Roma brought him in initially, just because I thought he offered a decent option in attack. Yeah. You know, a good Vice Dzeko, in my opinion. His goal tally the last two seasons isn't bad. I just think the fee they paid was a little higher than what I like. You know, I would have liked to have seen, but that's the market now, and we got to live with it. So, yeah, so it's an interesting story. He actually has the same agent as Pellegrini, in fact, and both moved from the same club. So, you know, he's been very unlucky this season, but he still has interest out there. As you mentioned, we interviewed his agent yesterday. He didn't have much to say. I mean, these guys, they're not going to tell you everything, but he was very forthcoming. He said Watford are interested, but he said that Roma consider him not transferable. Now, I've been covering Roma for a while now. I've never seen anybody be told that they're, you know, I've never seen Roma tell an agent that their player is not transferable. So if Watford come calling with a decent deal, I couldn't imagine that Roma say no, just because right now it just looks like a very poor fit.
Yeah.
People are going to label him a flop. I think that's unfair, but I understand it. So if the opportunity came for them to recoup some of, if not all of their money, given what Premier League teams pay now, I would absolutely see Roma bite at the chance to have that happen. I don't think it'll happen in January. I do think he would actually do pretty well in England, believe it or not. I think he has the physical characteristics to do well. Again, not great technically, but he can handle the physicality of the league, I think. And I think, you know, Watford, not a huge club, not a small club, owned by an Italian. I think he has the characteristics to do well. I tweeted this yesterday. If Watford maintain their interest through the summer, I absolutely think it's feasible that he moves there. But we'll just have to see. I'm a conspiracy theorist, so I'm convinced that him and Pellegrini, in my mind, they're almost like a package deal when they move to Roma this summer. But the agent who oversees them both, those are two of his biggest clients. He doesn't have any other big players. So obviously he likes to see their names out there. But yeah, I would love to see him in England. Just because I don't think he's going to get a fair opportunity at Roma like he deserves. So it should, as I said, Watford maintain their interest. I think it's very, very possible that he would move in the summer.
Very interesting. So this is probably the question I'm most eager to get your take on. And, you know, by the way you answered Emerson Palmieri part, saying that you're almost more upset if he leaves than Zecco, maybe that gives me a hint as to where you stand. So you know how in this is very common in the NBA that a lot of teams, you know, rather than being stuck in the middle, they'd rather, you know, bottom out, start over, go with more younger players. So taking a little bit that concept, and I'm not saying Roma's really stuck in the middle, but it's also not like, you know, especially this season, it's not that we can really see them as a serious contender for the Scudetto, not a serious contender in the Champions League. I think the best realistically is another Champions League spot. And when you look at Roma's squad, you know, Palmieri and Pellegrini are maybe more the exception than the rule. There is a good amount of fairly older players. So when I look at guys like Strootman, even Nainggolan, Kolarov has, you know, recently struggled a little bit. You think Roma should maybe start thinking of blowing it up, trying to go with more younger players? There's the new stadium looming. Do you think maybe the club needs to start thinking in those terms, going with younger players that are going to peak, you know, by the time the new stadium comes? Or do you think it makes more sense for them, while they do have to sell here or there, to try to add a piece here or there to what they have? What's your stance on what Roma should do big picture wise?
Yeah, so I'm pretty adamant that guys like, listen, Nainggolan and I guess you could say Alisson are their two only world-class players. So I don't ever think you should sell a world-class player. But names like De Rossi, Strootman, Dzeko, I absolutely think there's a case to be made that they should move on. Particularly given the wages that those you know, guys like them make. Monchi was brought in this past summer, and I think, you know, nobody is ignorant to the fact of what he does well. He buys low, he sells high. Given where this team is right now, given their age, I think it's pretty clear as to the direction they may be looking to move. I find it their non-activity during this window to be a pretty, you know, eye-opening factor into where they're trying to move. I think they're trying to get younger, as you stated. I believe they need to get younger. Yeah. I think a lot, in my opinion, some of these older guys that you mentioned, it's their last big contract, and it's with the Roma. And I think, in my opinion, that's one of the, like, if you're not going anywhere, those are some of the worst players to have because they're not really going to be motivated. I do think Roma need to go more towards the youth movement. Listen, they're not getting much from a lot of their older players. Dzeko, he still can, you know, offer quite a bit, but he's fallen off the pace dramatically from where he was last season. Strootman, he's had a terrible season. Dodossi, terrible. So, you know, if you could get younger names that are offering as much, ideally more, I think that's clearly the direction they need to move in. It almost feels like they've reached the end of a certain cycle.
Yep.
And in my opinion, I think it's time to sort of hit the reset button. But the only problem with that is this team, and more so this team, this club, just financially, they cannot afford to miss out on a Champions League League spot. We saw what happened when they missed out on the group stages last season. They were $40 million in the red just because of that. So I think they're going to try and find a way to sort of maintain the level without sacrificing too much, but getting younger. So I think that should happen. I hope that does happen. And obviously a lot of the older players, I still think you could get relatively good fees for them, especially given Roma paid so little for a lot of these guys. So I would not be shocked to see Monchi go in that direction, especially in the summer.
Yeah. And I think he should, because you have Schick, you have Pellegrini. We haven't seen much of Karsdorp, hardly anything at all, but he's a highly rated young player. I think they just need to go more in that direction, and I'm with you in that sense. So just very quickly, the last thing on Monchi, like, do you think he kind of regrets that line that Roma is in a supermarket? And look, you know, I don't put much stock in any quote on transfers. I also think, you know, the bravado on Twitter and on social media on transfers, like, you know, at the end of the day, the pitch decides. That's what matters. You know, Milan had this amazing summer, you know, and they were dominating on social media with the summer, but then we saw the results on the pitch. Do you think, though, like, maybe Monchi shouldn't have said that? Does that even matter to you? I mean, as you said, you know, you said over and over again, this is the track record of Roma. If a good offer comes in, they'll always consider it. I don't think you can totally telegraph that, but you think maybe he regrets saying that?
I'm sure he regrets the words that he used, but I think the sentiment is spot on. I mean, he can say supermarket. He can say, you know, we're a donation bin. He could say whatever. I mean, the fact of the matter is, for the last 7 years, Roma have been selling their best players anytime a significant offer has come in. So regardless if he said supermarket or whatever noun he uses, that's not going to change anything. The sentiment remains. Roma buy low, they sell high, and yeah, I'm sure he could have used, you know, he maybe could have expressed himself a little better, but it's not going to change anything. They're going to keep doing this, and I even see people saying, you know, even when the stadium opens, they need to do this for the stadium, and then when the stadium opens, that'll change. It's not going to change. I think people need to understand the gentlemen who owned Roma are hedge fund guys, so That's at the heart of what they do. So was it a silly comment? Sure. And anytime Roma sell a big player, that is absolutely going to be thrown in his face. But listen, that's his mantra. He buys low, he sells high, and it fits perfectly with what the club does.
Yeah. And then at the end of the day, it's really the pitch that matters, you know.
Right.
All the comments from Milan fans this summer, you know, whatever. At the end of the day, it's what you do on the pitch. So the last thing I wanted to ask you before I ask you a quick NBA question. So the last time I talked to you was kind of, I think, a little bit the beginning of the crisis at Roma. You know, not long ago, Di Francesco was being praised as this amazing surprise. He really surprised me. I didn't expect Roma to be as good as they were. They were riding high after winning the Group of Death in the Champions League. They actually looked like Scudetto contenders for a little bit. But what has happened, in your opinion, in the past 6 weeks or so? Because the team has really fallen off a cliff.
Yeah, it's been a really, really poor couple of months here, ever since they won the Derby against Lazio. You know, I've been saying that Di Francesco embodies Rudy Garcia to a T. It's almost scary now. The other day when they drew against Inter, he said Roma played a good 70 minutes. It was just the last 15 to 20 where we fell off and we weren't up to snuff. And I was just scratching my head at that comment. I couldn't believe it. I thought I had watched a completely different match. Roma against Inter played maybe a good 20 minutes. They were terrible. So I think a lot of it has to do with the manager, unfortunately. He deploys the very same approach, the same tactics. Roma, don't quote me on this. I might be wrong on the exact number, but I think out of all their league matches, which is either, 19 or 20, they've only scored more than one goal in a game 7 times, which is just mind-boggling if you do the math on that. It's absolutely absurd, their inability to score goals. The goals they concede are just from individual errors, which is just bizarre. You would think they'd learn their lesson, but for instance, the goal against Inter that they conceded when they were up 1-0. I mean, Bruno Perez is just standing there watching Vecino score. It's bizarre. I think a lot of it has to do with Di Francesco. He doesn't have a plan B. When things don't work, it's almost like he's just trying to force feed the attack. The midfield is disjointed. The defense, Florenzi has looked horrible. He does not belong at right back. It's just all of this combined into one has just resulted in a terrible, terrible couple of months. And frankly, if this continues for another week or two, I would not even be remotely shocked if he was sacked.
Wow. Wow. What a turn of events. So now let me ask you, I want to ask you one NBA question. People that have listened to our shows together are well aware you're a big Cavs fan, you're a season ticket holder, I'm a big Celtics fan. And look, you know, I always tell myself I'm not going to fall in the trap if the Cavaliers struggle in the regular season. It doesn't matter. It ultimately only matters what they do in the playoffs. We've seen this song and dance every year with the Cavs really struggling. But maybe this year, it's a little bit different. The team does seem a little bit older. The Kyrie trade, you know, as much as I love Isaiah Thomas, hasn't really worked out, at least from where I'm sitting. So I want to ask you first, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you with your Cavs going in to the playoffs? And the other question that I have is, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty on LeBron James' future. You know, part of me says, you know, maybe he should at least tell Cleveland what he's going to do so they have an idea of what to do on the trade market. You do have this asset of the Nets pick that you got in the Celtics trade. Maybe it's not as great a pick as what it seemed at the time. But is there a player that you'd be comfortable having the Cavs sacrifice to bring in, even if there's uncertainty with LeBron James? Is there a player you'd give up the Nets pick? So maybe answer that first and then tell me how concerned you are with the Cavs from 1 to 10.
Okay, so concern level is at an 8. I wasn't that concerned, and then I saw the story of this team meeting with Isaiah Thomas calling out Kevin Love. Weird. I don't know how we get to that point. Isaiah Thomas has been back for like a month and he's calling out Kevin Love. So that's weird. As far as the Nets pick goes, I want them to give it up. I think it's stupid for them to hold on to it just because I don't think LeBron James cares about who may be here in June. To me, the window is just so short and so small. I think you have to do whatever you can to go all out to try and get a ring. Because, frankly, I think if you could replace Isaiah Thomas with a half-decent name and then bring in a legitimate superstar, I think that would be great. I mean, they've been rumored for getting George Hill. I don't know if that really moves the needle.
Yeah.
As far as who I'd give that pickup for, though, just some of the rumored names like DeAndre Jordan, I wouldn't give it up for him. I saw a name like today, like CJ McCollum. I would absolutely give it up for him. I think it's fantastic. But other than that, it's just the options are so bare for the Cavs. I don't know what more they could legitimately do. But the biggest fear I have is that LeBron leaves and that they feel the need to re-sign Isaiah Thomas to this huge contract, which the chickens have come home to roost for me because I made fun of him for being so short and then the Cavs make this trade. And I end up with him on my team, so that just shows you karma working full force. God, I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm extremely concerned. Usually I say with LeBron, you walk into the finals, but if this keeps up, I don't even know if they'll make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, let alone the NBA Finals.
Wow. Very, very interesting. I will tell you this. I was in the camp that if LeBron doesn't want to tell him what to do, you have to keep the pick. But then I heard a podcast with Brian Windhorst and Zach Lowe, and Windhorst made a great point. If LeBron leaves, odds are you won't have a player like that for 75 years or so in Cleveland. I mean, he's that special that you do have to go all in while you have him, and I'm in that.
Completely agree.
Yeah, so let's close on this. As I mentioned, I really love your site, IS Roma Press. And the reason that I like it is, you know, there's a lot of sites, that, for lack of a better word, aggregate information from a lot of other places. Now, you do a little bit of that, but you have a lot of exclusive content. You have some really good articles, really good interviews with agents, like the last one you did with Defrel, and I really enjoy your podcast. So tell our listeners what you have going on the site coming up and on the podcast.
So I'm going to be hounding more agents of a lot of the Roma players. Really, that's the big get that we're able to get during this window. Believe it or not, I mean, David, you can attest to this, but these agents love seeing their name just because it helps them garner interest for their clients, and it shows them that they're looking out for these guys. So we'll be doing a lot more of that, breaking down this whole Dzeko fiasco. I don't know how it's going to end, but it's just very, very bizarre. I mean, if you would have asked people a month ago if Dzeko would have been near the exit door, I think people, frankly, would have been dumbfounded. So we'll be breaking that down and then seeing how the Roma can potentially get out of this crisis that they're in, because should it keep up, I don't think they're going to finish in a Champions League place.
Very, very interesting. So listen, John, I can't thank you enough for coming on. You always bring it when you have it on the podcast. So thanks again, and I look forward to chatting with you again in the rest of the year. So thanks again, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me, David.